Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of the show. Today I'm joined by casting director Erica Bream. Erica, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. Well, you know.
Yeah. It's my go-to question since I've started this, and I always say the same line every time, but it is that I feel like I should ask, how are you doing during COVID lockdown, this whole thing? Like,
you know, I think probably better than others and worse than others. I mean, it's a weird time. Our baseline is fine, I guess.
Yeah.
Pretty fine.
Just wake up. Wake up is the baseline.
Yes, yes. We're definitely, we have not gotten it. So I feel very lucky from that standpoint, you know. So, yeah, we're just
trucking
one day at a time.
One day at a time. Exactly. Have you been, because you were in LA, but you'd made the move from LA to where you are now well before all this happened.
Yes. We moved at the end of 2017. So we've been in North Carolina since the end of 2017. So gratefully we didn't have to move cross country during this time.
People have done.
I know. They've moved home. They've moved closer to family. And, you know, we, again, there are things in which I feel like we got really lucky because we moved closer to family back in 2017. So, you know, we did that already, but, yeah, it's wild, man. You know, home.
I guess being out of LA or a big city for something like this is probably in some ways a little bit of a relief. Like you have maybe outdoors a little bit more accessible, less claustrophobia of like 10 million plus people. And I think the people in the big metropolises have suffered a little bit more, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, people in apartment buildings with no real outdoor space and things like that, it's, you know, certainly a lot harder for a lot of those folks. But the you know, the biggest thing for when we lived in Los Angeles, we lived in like 500 square feet. So very grateful to not have been quarantined in that space with our toddler. Exactly. And to have a yard and things like that, that we definitely didn't have when we were living in Los Angeles. But I think there's no perfect place to ride this out other than another country maybe. But
I don't think so. I think but it's bad everywhere. Like I'm here in the UK, it's getting like lockdowns sort of hardening up again.
Yeah.
Different, like we're in the West, we kind of have it a little lucky even though it's real bad. You know, I've said this a few times, and one of my friends, he's from India, and he moved back to India from Singapore, went to Goa, and was there working, and then lockdown hit around March. Tourist season already ended, so it was just locals. They didn't really care about them, and they had about 2 weeks where there was no food coming into the town at all.
Oh my God.
Like he literally was going around the village for 2 weeks just trying to go to the locals to see if they had anything in excess from their own just regular supply that they were using. So that little bit of context, I think, for me was a really helpful one back then when I thought, okay, I've got like Wi-Fi and I have my apartment. And
you've got your toilet paper and your apartment and your Wi-Fi and you're fine.
Let's not get carried away. I had some things, but not the luxuries. Those ran out pretty quick. Anyway, we're not here to talk about lockdown and toilet paper, although I happily could. What's it been like for you, I guess, from a work perspective with all this? Did you kind of have a slowdown like a lot, or did you have like a little bit of a weird uplift with work?
Well, it was a little bit of a weird uplift, but not in paid work. It was, you know, it was these self-tape challenges and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's so funny to look back to March and think about what we were all thinking then, which is that it would last 2 weeks and then maybe a month, and then that we'd all be back to work by 4th of July. I mean, whatever, like, what a joke. But, you know, early on, I remember I was sort of tracking the news pretty closely on things starting back in January, and just kind of spidey sense was up, you know, whatever. And so as things near, what was it, March 6th or something like that? I don't know. It was when everything started shutting down, when like the, you know, basketball was canceled and all of that stuff. That day I was sort of seeing it approach. I was understanding that my son was not going to have daycare anymore after that. And I was like, I know people are going to be freaking out. the best thing we can do right now is try to just take our minds off of it. And so I started doing self-tape challenges right away. And with those got busier each time. I did three of them. And each one sort of increased in the number of participants. So the first one I think was like 305, and then the next one was 1500, and then the next one was 8,500, I think, is what the last one ended up being. And so with those actually took up a lot of my day, but in a way that made me feel very normal in as things were falling apart. Right? Just like the opposite of normal. And they gave me sort of a way to move through my day in a way that was quite
a
normal.
Bit of structure.
Real structure and like artistic structure and, you know, all of those things. So those sort of increased my workload. And then I've been teaching online class. I actually started teaching online classes when we moved here in 2017 over Zoom. And so when everything started and people were like, well, I need to do something to help my craft, to help my art, to help my brain, to help my emotions, those got busier as well. So things sort of ticked up from that standpoint. But then, you know, I mean, what does busy look like anymore? It's hard to say. But I did, I cast a theater festival every summer with my wonderful casting life partner. I like to call her Kara Shute Rosenbaum. We do that every year. I think this is my 11th or 12th year. I can't remember which one. And of course, no theater. Yeah. So this year, they put it online. They put it over Zoom. So we did actually cast that starting in, I think it was June that we started casting it. And then I started on a series in July. So things started getting busier again from that point. But you know, it's
it can change any second.
That's really
the feeling, right?
Like, yeah, and like sometimes busy is just so relative compared to sitting and staring at your phone reading the news all day long. You know, it's doing one thing could make you feel busy in comparison to that. So,
sure.
It's been 2020 has been very interesting.
A very strange year.
Professional standpoint.
I think on many standpoints, but I get it. But I mean, you sound like you were kind of not prepared. That's totally the wrong word.
But with
the Zoom side of things and having done classes, like you weren't coming to Zoom, like I think 90% of the populace going, what is this? Oh, and now I live here. And now,
I live here.
Like, you know, what background do I use today? Oh, I can actually be in Cuba without going to Cuba. And you've used it and actually know it or knew it well enough to know the limitations, but I guess maybe the potential of it. So did you find that was just a very natural transition amidst the manicness of lockdown to help people with these classes?
Yeah. The Zoom has been easy for me. I've been using it for a long time. And it was very interesting because in all of my classes pre-COVID, my online classes pre-COVID, I would always have to give like a little Zoom tutorial, like this is how you do things. This is, you know, this is what this means. Make sure you connect your audio, you know, all of these things. And now it's like everybody is so used to it. Everybody's just a pro when it comes to Zoom. But I felt comfortable sort of upping my workload on it because I wasn't figuring it out and having the sort of normal frustrations that a lot of people were having trying to figure it out in, you know, literally getting dumped into the deep end, like figure this out now so that we can communicate with you and whatever. So I feel again, very lucky from that standpoint that I had even been, using it and trying. I tried out a number of different video conferencing platforms in order to get to Zoom for my classes. So I had tried all these different things. None of it was super new to me. And the, you know, teaching on it wasn't new to me. All of that was sort of, very much in my wheelhouse. So I am definitely lucky from that standpoint.
I mean, you're calling it luck, which is fair. I think from the outside looking in, it's probably just, you know, preparation for stuff you were doing anyway, and it was just, you know, it all kind of meshed together at the wrong time but right time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I've spoken to you for like 10 minutes and I don't really know you that well yet, but from the outside looking in, my perception is, and correct me if I'm wrong with any of this, casting obviously is like your passion. You've done that for a long, long time, but there seems to be this another side of you maybe that's more sort of business, entrepreneurial minded, you know, with the way your website's set up, it is very much casting, but also coach, consultant. You've got your blog, you're creating content. Dare I go a bit marketing and put that hat on? You've got the personal brand. Terrible word. But like, is that natural and organic, or is that a little bit thought out and something that you've done intentionally?
It was thought out. It was thought out. And it did not come, none of that came easily to me. Casting has nothing to do with anything that you just mentioned.
Sure.
It was a real struggle for me. And I started it back in 2017 when I was pregnant with my son, and I knew we were going to be moving, and I knew I had to sort of develop another facet to what I was able to do so that I could work from home easily with my newborn and, help bring finance, you know, bring income to the family and things like that. But I didn't know what I was doing. I was not on Twitter until 2017. Had no idea how to use social media. I just joined Instagram, I think it was this year, from a business standpoint. I know, it's just ridiculous. It's just
I'm so applauding stupid that you haven't done it now. I'm not applauding.
Well, like, I had a personal account, but I didn't have a business account.
Still.
Yeah. None of that stuff came naturally to me. There, when I first joined Twitter, my sister and brother-in-law had to give me a tutorial on like what retweeting was and subtweets and whatever, and they were like, you try this, okay, now try engaging with people like this, and you know, whatever.
You're like, all right, I'll wear the dunce hat for now, but when I know than you.
Yeah, and I would never purport to, because I have no idea how the stuff works. But that's the learning that stuff, learning how to market, learning how to I tried the very first website I ever had, I built myself, and it was trash, you know, I mean, like, you have to figure all these stuff out. I wrote these blog posts, but didn't connect them in any searchable way to anything. So, you know, all of that stuff is a learning curve when you are working on what you mentioned, sort of your own personal brand or whatever. It's not just about your art. It is about all of the entrepreneurial things that you just mentioned, right? It's about defining your brand, making it so that people can find you, making the contact information viable, making your social media link up, and you've got sort of a certain perspective or voice to it. I mean, there's so many things there that have nothing to do with like your acting or my casting or whatever. And it does take time. And I think, again, I lucked out in that I started that process a couple of years before everything went online. Sure. You know, all of us are spending all of our time online now. If I was trying to figure all that stuff out right now, I would be a mess. Just because I was so stressed out about it, you know.
But yeah, you were doing it whilst you had like a newborn as well. Like that's also got its own stresses too. So yeah. I think you had your own personal stress to deal with at the time, right?
Different than a pandemic, but yes, newborns are not easy.
A personal pandemic, should we call it? Maybe I don't
personal
know.
Personal tornado for sure.
There you go. That's maybe a better word than pandemic. Otherwise, your kid will probably hate me when he gets older. But I think it's an interesting point in conversation because you've diversified, or like you said, opened up into more than just one thing. Not that there's anything wrong with just being casting 100% focused or acting 100% focused. But I guess what we're seeing more and more this year is that there is no one thing in perpetuity for life, like whatever your career is, whether it's the safe bet finance person or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so actually, do you feel like it's something that we should, especially as artists, be looking at actually a bit more closely now? Not necessarily to make a personal brand, but say as an actor, you know, should be looking at writing, producing, learning a skill that maybe has zero to do with acting artistically, but is maybe business or marketing based, because
If you can, if you've got the bandwidth, if you've got the interest in it, what I wouldn't want you to do is do it because you feel like you have to do it. You know, because people tell you should, that you need to be a multi-hyphenate or whatever. Like, do it because you love it, because it is an arm of what you're already doing and that interests you. I have been teaching audition technique for a long
A
time,
while.
a long time, and I've always loved teaching. I love teaching actors. I love teaching and mentoring my staff, my support staff. It's always been a huge piece of what I love about my craft. So it was kind of a natural addition to what I was doing. So if you have something like that where you're like, hey, I love picking apart scripts. I wonder if I can spend some time writing one, give it a go. You know, I think whatever you can do right now to expand your universe, considering that we're all stuck within the walls of our home for most of our days, I think that can't be a bad thing, especially right now, as you are trying to figure out how to act online and how to get yourself back to set and things like that. You know, it's like, okay, so acting is filling my cup sometimes, but sometimes I find it very frustrating trying to act over Zoom and that I, you know, can't get personalized feedback because I'm self-taping all the time, you know, whatever. So is there another arm of or addition to, it doesn't even have to be related to acting. As you said, you know, if there's a different kind of business thing that has always interested you that you can develop. I think we all need to find a way to develop ourselves further right now, because if we're just sort of limited to what we, you know, the one thing that we do, and it's not taking up most of our time, and we're spending the rest of our time worrying or anxious or sad or depressed. I mean, you know, it's not going to cure depression. I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to
It's
therapize
not,
anybody, but I think that can't be a bad thing,
sure.
you know, and you're stuck at home right now, so you might as well play around and see what you can find if you have the energy and bandwidth. If you don't,
That's
that's
okay
okay
too.
too. It really is. It really, really is. There's a global pandemic. It's not to mention economies are failing and people are losing jobs and whatever. Like, it's okay if you feel like I can only do this one thing right now. Great. Great. Do that one thing.
Absolutely. And I think it's a valid point about having the passion for it in the first place. I think it's an interesting time though, because maybe historically going back probably 5, 10 years, especially within the arts, you might have felt a little bit unsure about saying, hey, I'm an actor who also does something totally different. And now it's actually much more accepted, so that if you always had that passion, you don't have to hide it and live a double or triple or quadruple life or whatever it might be. And I think that's, you know, a lot more authentic. And we'll hear all the marketing terms about personal brand. In my opinion, that's just a fancy schmancy way of saying just be yourself.
Totally.
But people have to sell, and that's the fancy way of selling, you know, personal brand as a course that you can spend
Yes, right, of
$600
course. Of course. Yes.
on. From a that's marketing and business, and people are probably listening to this going, I'm an actor. Talk to me about like acting stuff.
Acting and casting.
Exactly. Can we delve into the Zoom world of it a little bit? I've seen,
Yes,
I
absolutely.
saw a blog you wrote where you were talking about some of the sort of key tips. I don't think you need to redact like all of them. I can link it, but I guess it's such a new thing. You know, self-taping and auditioning in the room are different skills unto themselves. Do you feel like a Zoom read, obviously, is close to self-tape, but does it have some of its own little pitfalls and nuances?
It's actually not at all like self-taping, because you have audition nerves added to it, and technology that if it fails you in the moment that you're doing it is just panic inducing.
And that's the new one. I mean, the audition nerves we've had, but it's the tech for people the tech who aren't tech
with the well. Audition nerves, which you don't necessarily have when you're self-taping, right? Like you certainly don't have audition nerves when you may get little like butterflies and things like that when you're performing, but it's not the same as audition nerves. And if the tech fails you while you're self-taping, you have, generally speaking, you've got some time to figure it out, or you can at least communicate like, hey, I'm having some major issues, stand by, it's coming. If the tech fails you while you are in the middle of this read and things, you know, fritz out or freeze or somebody drops off or whatever, It is impossible not to be like, oh my God, I'm going to lose this job, right? Like the stakes are higher. The stakes are just way, way higher.
No, what are you saying, Erica? We've been taught you just keep doing your piece. You just stay in character, right? And just keep performing.
You should try, but it's not always possible.
Oh, no, it's
so
not.
And I think, of course, the stakes are obviously even higher now, since nobody's been working for the last 7 months and everybody's dying to work and really wanting and maybe needing their health insurance. So they're really wanting to work in 2020 to get the hours they need and things like that. So there's so many variables that are added to a Zoom read that are not part of a self-tape, which is different than an in-person. Right?
Just for fun, just because we needed a bit more.
Oh my gosh. And here's the thing, right? Like, as stressful as it is to act over this, like, thank God we have it.
Absolutely.
If we didn't, you know, if this pandemic had happened in 2008, I don't know what we'd do.
Skype would have crashed. So
oh my gosh.
That we would have, yeah, it would
There's
be
no way.
The mental health thing isn't great anyway, but this is dampened it and diluted what is be a big issue a lot. So you're right.
So it is, you know, as frustrating as the tech can be and as weird as it is to act over Zoom, we are so lucky to have it. We are so, so lucky to have it. So if you can try to embrace that aspect of it, maybe that will lessen some of the stress around it.
Sure.
Acting here on Zoom, it's a game of energy, it's a game of connection, and then add to that this idea that sometimes you're dealing with internet issues, a little lag in the reader, how can you stay present without anticipating? All of those things. It is not easy. It requires practice. It 1,000,000% requires practice. So I think the best reads I've seen, because we've, you know, I've been casting off of Zoom since July. And the best reads that we've seen are people who are just relaxed. They're relaxed and they're ready to play and they're focused on character and connection. And they're not letting all of the other noise of this get in the way.
Which is the same note that we would give generally no matter what, right?
Absolutely, for sure.
But it's like you said, so many other bells and whistles and noises. Do you feel getting comfortable enough with having done it a few times as a test run with friends or peers? Or is it just, you know, stuff like this or people like you and just informing yourself well enough so you can go, oh, okay, so if I actually like make sure I know where my eye line is on Zoom, it's different to when I do it, you know, in the audition room or in a self-tape.
Mm-hmm. For practice with friends, for sure. It's not going to give you the same stakes as doing it. There's this feeling, and I'm sure you've been using Zoom long enough that I'm sure you've experienced this at least once or twice. When you are the person in the virtual waiting room and you're waiting, you're like, hey, I'm ready. I got this. I'm ready. And then there's that little flash in your screen changes, and all of a sudden it's like it's
drop my cell phone. I wasn't on my phone. What are you talking? No, what? No, I'm.
You won't get that feeling with your friends. So practicing eye lines and your tech and things like that with your friends for sure, but just know that it's not a perfect.
No, of course.
You know, replacement for sitting in that waiting room of an actual virtual audition and thinking like, I got this. Oh God. It's weird. It is this thing, and it's, you know, Zoom, you know, all of the different platforms have virtual waiting rooms, right? Zoom obviously does. If you use We Audition, they have a virtual waiting room.
Yeah.
EcoCast Live as well. EcoCast Live gives you a countdown. And I was
that's worse in some ways.
I was working with an actor on it, and she was like, "Oh my god, that countdown hit!" I thought I was in the Hunger Games. And I was like, "That is a perfect metaphor
for what this is."
Yeah. So that feeling, and I think the best thing you can do for yourself is anticipate that when your screen changes into one of those things, you will have that moment, and how can you parlay that into something useful?
Sure.
In your read, so that it's not just taking over, and you're like, calm down, stop, and then all of a sudden you're in your head.
But I think the fact that, you know, people like you were talking about it and talking about this thing, when people then hear this, and hopefully more things like this start to come out, and people do it more, it becomes more part of the popular discourse, so that we're not going, "Oh, I thought it was just me who's really weird and panicking, right, and anxious all the time." It's like, no, it's this human psychology thing. Like, they may as well have a buzzer when it hits to zero when you come
Seriously.
In.
Seriously. I mean, it's just goofy. So the that's a huge, huge piece of it, is just understanding that you don't necessarily know when your screen changes what you're going to see on the other end, how many faces you're going to see in there. Our camera's going to be on or off. Are, you know, what happens if your dog starts barking uncontrollably? Like, all of these things are things that I think get into actors' heads. And the best advice I can give anybody is A, to use the energy, the nervous energy, into something useful, but also B, don't worry about the ambient noise. It's 2020. My 3-year-old runs in all the time when I'm on Zoom, all the time. You know, it's just like, this is
people
it's 2020. It. Yes, people totally get it, and they understand. That's
gonna be
a t-shirt. And they empathize.
That's going to be a t-shirt. It's 2020. Just, that's all it has to say.
It's 2020. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I think it's important. You know, a big part of, you know, for me doing this and bringing people on from the casting side is to openly demystify it a little bit as a process, but also just, it sounds so stupid, but humanize it. Because, you know, we all know you're humans, but when we go into a read, or we go even when we used to do stuff in person, you get those 5, 10, maybe 20 minutes for a bigger part, but you guys are stressed. You're on a time scale. You've got the next person to come in because you've rented the place out for the day, and it's just got to be like very vigilant. And we don't necessarily get to see you as the human as much. And I think this period has helped.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a lot to just see. Okay, they get it. They're freelancers as well. Like, they
exactly
stuff
exactly.
as us. They pitch like we do for projects.
We can get fired.
So same, when we hopefully same. Come in, whilst it's still gonna not mitigate that drop moment that you mentioned in the nerves, we can all kind of hopefully just breathe and go, we're all kind of going through this.
And we are. And I think that's really important to remember, is that not every casting director has been using Zoom since 2017. We are on a learning curve as well. Sure. So if you get a virtual casting notice and you feel like it's completely devoid of instruction or information, it's not because somebody's trying to test you or pull one over on you. It's that we're learning what we need to tell people. So same thing with self-tapes too, is that we're not leaving things out to be like, let's see what they do with this. Like, it's a moment that we're learning how we need to, what we need to explain. Do we need to over-explain some things first, you know, because not everybody's on the same learning curve necessarily. We're learning what can be assumed versus what cannot be assumed. And when things go wrong on the tech, we panic too.
Sure.
Cause we've got producers in the room. We want this to go well. We need this to go well. If you're not in the virtual waiting room, how do we find you? Do we need to email your agent if they can't find you because you've turned all of your internet, you know, you've turned all of your devices to do not disturb? How can we get through to you?
It's the same thing. You used to be thinking, you know, I want the performance to be good if producers are in, because I want them to feel like my taste in actor is good. But on top of that, now it's, is their tech going to work though? Because if it doesn't work, then it's,
We're talking our producers through the tech. Okay, everybody turn your cameras off. Okay, pin this person, whatever. You know, we're talking them through it too. It's very complicated, and we're all trying to get better at it together, but we're still clunky. It's clunky.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we're in preschool with this at the moment. I think it's such early days.
We have a long ways to go.
Yeah, like the training wheels aren't coming off for a while. No. So, but that's kind of exciting too, in many ways, because I do feel like it democratizes and globalizes casting in a way that was kind of happening, but now it's now it really doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't really matter if I'm in the UK or you're in New Orleans or if you're in LA anymore, you know. And from the actor's side, that's great because we can get seen for stuff a little bit more than maybe before. Mm-hmm. From your side, do you feel like if it hasn't, do you feel like it might change a little bit that you're not in the major markets anymore? I know you still work with LA and New York for, you know, specific stuff that comes from there, but do you feel like with this, it mitigates any possible eventuality of you not being based there as being a problem?
You know, The Southeast has been a self-tape market for a long time. You know, we've been sort of relying on tech down here as a market for a while. And obviously they were relying on it long before I ever moved to the Southeast too. And, I think the point of that is that the market itself is very spread out. It's not just people in Atlanta or people in New Orleans. There are people in Charleston and Charlotte and Birmingham and, Shreveport and Savannah and all over the place. They're not just in those, they're not just in Wilmington. They're not just in Atlanta. So as such, everybody's spread out, and that's why they've been relying on the tech. So that's sort of what we've been used to, is the fact that we've been doing things virtually because we're spread out and we get to places as needed when we're needed. Actors for callbacks, casting directors, you know, go to different cities for callbacks if it's not the city that they live in. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, I think it's something that those of us down here are actually very comfortable with, very used to. It's more a matter of, do people in LA and New York, are they comfortable with it? Mm-hmm. And what we're finding now, of course, is that, yeah, totally they're comfortable with it. It's just a matter of making sure that people understand time zones. That's really that's the biggest challenge. If you've got a producer in Toronto and a producer in Los Angeles and your casting director's in New Orleans in Central Time, like, finding times that work for things like Zooms and whatever can be trickier. But can you do it? Mm-hmm. Sure. 1,000,000%. So it's just a matter of being cool with that. And what I'm finding in the producers who I've been talking to and working with is that they really dig it. I mean, they don't love, you know, the virtual writers' rooms. I think they're all trying to get used to that. But I think the fact that they can, you know, quarantine or be wherever they are while working on a project that shoots in Baton Rouge, they're like, this project that I'm on right now is going to shoot in Baton Rouge. I've got two producers in Colorado, producer in Toronto, two producers in Toronto, one in New York, maybe two in New York, and one in Los Angeles, and I'm in North Carolina.
But that's so amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. That, because to your point, maybe without this 5-10 years ago, that would have been like impossibility. Possible.
Right. Absolutely. So, yeah. You got to be together. You got to be together for sessions and locations and writers' rooms and meetings and whatever. So it's pretty awesome.
Plenty of long-term benefits to come out of this, and you know, hopefully we do get back into doing stuff in person as well, please. But
someday.
There's a balance. There's a balance there. I have plenty of other things I do want to get into around, like, Zoom and working with. I know you know, work with filmmakers closely as well, so I kind of want to flip it and talk to the filmmaker side a little bit. But I see Cal here is in the waiting room, so I'm going to shut up. I'm going to bring him in.
Okay, great.
And let him just ask you a few questions and have 5-10 minutes with you. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hi, Cal.
Good afternoon. Hi, Erica.
Hi. How are you?
I am doing well, my dear. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you in the world?
I'm in New York right now.
Okay.
You sound like a New Yorker after all the time you've been spending there.
And I look like a New Yorker as well right now.
You do. That's what I was going to say.
Aggressive homeless person.
I mean, Or and I didn't want to say it, the reincarnation of Saddam Hussein. I'm not sure if that's what you're going for, but
that was the look I asked my barber for.
Yeah, I like your hair, Cal. I like it. I haven't had my hair cut in almost a year, so no judgment.
So Eric, I thought we hadn't actually met before, but we have. We met. You used to work with April Webster, right?
Long time. Yep.
And your last name used to be Silverman.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think we met like 10 years ago when I first moved to LA.
Sounds right.
You moved to LA 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was it. That's right. And almost 11 now. Yeah.
Wow.
Me and Ashley went over there together at 10 years, just over 10 years ago. Maybe 11.
Wow. Time flies.
Now I feel old. Thanks.
You don't have that many grays now, dude. I've got far more grays than you do.
That doesn't make me feel that much better, but okay, fair enough.
You both look good. Don't worry.
Thanks.
About it.
Okay. Our insecurities are gone. But you're not. But Erica is not in LA anymore. She's moved to
North Carolina.
I was gonna say New Orleans, but I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But Cal, you were saying to me, you obviously have an agent down that way, and I guess.
I have an agent in Louisiana, and they cover Atlanta and.
Yeah,
maybe North Carolina. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they generally cover the region. If they're covering you for at least Atlanta, yeah.
What prompted the move down there?
My child. My in-laws are here, and we didn't have any family near us in Los Angeles, and it really does take a village to raise a child. So we decided to just. You know, we upended our lives having a child. We decided to just upend it further by moving across the country.
And you probably got a house that was 10 times bigger than what you had in LA.
Oh, yeah. Without question. It's more, yes. And a yard and things like that. And yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great.
So what have you guys been talking about so far? What have I missed?
You'd think we would have been talking a lot about casting, but we're actually talking about like personal branding and marketing and all this stuff. A little bit about Zoom.
Zoom.
We've kind of been you know, talking a lot about the process of casting over Zoom and you know, things we can maybe be prepared for from an actor's perspective.
Yeah. How is that going, casting over Zoom?
You know, it's better than I would have thought. It really is. I think people have embraced it. I think with enough instruction, they are pretty darn good at it. That's really what it takes, is just a clarity of what's going to happen with the tech, what's going to happen if things go wrong with the tech. Yeah. How can I be in communication if I'm having major issues on my end? I found that the more I can make it clear to the actors that they're fully supported in every way, even if things go wrong, that they're not losing an opportunity if things go wrong. Generally speaking, they're pretty relaxed and they can just have fun. We've done a chemistry read over Zoom, and that was awesome. That was great. So it's all workable. It's just that we're on this fucking learning curve, and everybody's in different places on it. So, including casting. So we all just need to figure it out together. You know, EcoCast Live they're sort of working on their platform as well for virtual auditions. And we've all gotten so used to Zoom that now we need to learn this if we want to use it. And that's a whole different ballgame. It's not the same at all. And that's taking some, you know, that's brand new to everybody. Actors, reps, casting, whatever. So we are, you know, we're all trying to learn these different platforms. We're trying to learn Zoom. We're trying to learn how to use Skype through Ecamm Live. We're trying to figure out how we can use WeAudition with collaborators. I mean, there's like all of these different things that we're trying to figure out that we didn't need to know how to do prior to March.
Right.
With that comes bumps and bruises along the way, and just, you know, but yeah, I think the more actors feel like they've not been left in the dark in terms of how the process is going to work on this thing on whatever platform, generally speaking, they're pretty cool. It's been good.
Oh, there's a tech freeze. Right. Oh, no.
When are you coming out to LA next, Ash?
When am
there
I?
There you go. Yeah, right as we're talking about it. Yeah. There you go. That would make an audition quite open. Yeah.
I don't know.
US.
I was supposed to be in LA in May of this year. Obviously, that got canceled real quick. Hopefully next year. I don't know. I've got my British Airways voucher that lasts up until May. They're going to have to push that back a little bit.
Yeah, they're going to send
it. I want my £3,000 honored. So,
oh man.
I'd like to think next year. I don't know. I really can't tell you.
Nobody knows anything.
That's the thing.
Yeah, no one knows. No one knows what's going to happen. It's all just winging it, really.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all just day by day, right? Hour by hour. Hoping for good news.
But things slowly start to pick up. I don't know what it's quite like over there. The people I'm talking to seem to say that stuff in LA is slowly kind of building back up. I know here in the UK, there are productions that have been filming for a few months now. So with the right protocols and the right stuff, people are getting back to work. But it seems like it's the bigger productions that were maybe already filming before lockdown. Perhaps they had insurance already.
Right.
Or they're Amazon backed and they've got the budget to cover the 30% bump in COVID costs.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is that like the productions that were filming before that needed to stop filming, you're right, they're grandfathered into their insurance. I mean, it doesn't cover COVID, but they at least have insurance. Yeah. But with this agreement between the unions and the studios about the COVID costs and procedures and things like that, I think you will see more and more production, but people they need to make sure they're doing it right. So they're, you know, it can't just be like, great, we're ready to go, let's go. It's like, all right, do we have the test kits we need? Do we have the PPE that we need? Do we have this COVID manager, which is a position that didn't exist until now? You know, like, what do we have, all of those things? So I think you will, I mean, you know, it's so hard to say with the sort of resurgence of cases in certain places. Right. But I think at least with this plan or this agreement, they can move forward in a way that they all feel protected and they feel like they can do it safely, which I think is really important. But then it's just going to be a matter of state by state or country by country, you know, what's happening with cases and what the, you know, how much they're locking down or locking back down.
Yeah, right. Presumably there's going to be less affectionate scenes, less people hugging, less people kissing.
You know, right. Fewer groups, fewer party scenes, fewer.
Yeah, very minimal, yeah.
Less extras, more CGI crowds, and
right.
Extras. Anyone who made a living as an extra probably won't be able to anymore, I guess.
Or they're going to only use the same extras. You know, they're not going to use different people. They're going to just have the same population. And so maybe they'll work every day instead of sporadically. Who knows? They'll just be on one show or one project.
Mm-hmm.
Impossible to say.
So, I mean, I guess you deal with a lot of local hire casting now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And yeah, even though I've had an agent in Louisiana for about probably 4 years now, I'm always unclear whether I can actually be hired.
Louisiana is different. So it, you know, the local hire rules vary state to state.
Right.
And a lot of states, it's like there's no rule. The rule is like, if you can get yourself there, it counts.
Right.
Like New York doesn't have any rules. Los Angeles doesn't have any rules. You know, Georgia doesn't have any rules. It's just like, you just have to be able to get yourself there with, have an address that you can put on the paperwork. And then you have to cover all of your expenses related to that. But with Louisiana, part of their incentives started after Katrina, as a way to get Louisianans back to work. So their incentives, in order to get them, they need a certain number of the cast and crew to be true Louisianans with a Louisiana address on their ID, not just for the paperwork. That doesn't limit them completely. They can easily have people who they bring in, or people who are in every other respect, quote unquote, local hires, in that they're paying their way there, but those people don't count toward the incentive count.
Yeah, yeah.
So every state is different, but Louisiana you could be a local hire, but without an address on your ID, you know, you are sort of, you're not covering the incentives for them, but somebody else maybe. So that's where it might be okay for you. But like North Carolina doesn't have any rules about it. A lot of states just don't have any rules. It's just get yourself there and put yourself up and cover your ground transpo and your food and stuff like that. You know, that's, it just depends on the project. You know, for the Southeast market in general and Atlanta in general has really expanded.
We
have had so many people move here, I mean myself included, you know, over the last couple of years, that they really can pull people who are actually in the Southeast, not just who can be a local hire in the Southeast. And we don't have to worry about the logistics around that. We don't have to worry about you getting on an airplane or whatever. You know, you're just driving within the region, wherever you are in the region. So there's there is a bonus to that in that it's one less piece of logistics to worry about. We don't have to worry about a flight getting canceled or weather delaying you or whatever because you are in the region already. If that scene's supposed to shoot next week, but they are wanting to move it up to tomorrow, we don't have to worry about, can we get you there? You know, so there are some huge benefits to having people who are truly in the region already. So, you know, when you're up against that's a piece of the puzzle too. It depends on, you know, it could be that your agent knows certain casting directors don't want to see people who are outside of the region for certain roles, even if you can be a local hire in every other way. So they're, you know, they're submitting you thoughtfully from that standpoint. You know, they're being careful the way they submit you. But you know, there's all kinds of factors that go into it. You know, having boots on the ground in the region is the best thing you can do for yourself, having an agent in the region. So that's the best case scenario for you. Sorry, just throwing pens and things into the office.
Yeah, no, that was my main question that I wanted to ask, really. Yeah, because they've always been unsure about, you know, even if there's a reluctance to hire out of state actors, which, you know, sounds like it probably is, especially now given travel restrictions.
Yeah, now, I mean, who knows now with flights and things like that? What?
Yeah, I mean,
I would think New York productions don't want people in from out of the tri-state area. Same with LA productions, like. Let's stick with the folks who don't have to get on an airplane.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, no one wants someone who's just got off a plane to come onto your set, right?
It's tough. It's real tough. You know, I think the more these rapid tests come through, the easier that might become. Mm-hmm. The airline travel. But right now, there's, you know, are you getting enough time to get somebody there, quarantine them, test them, and then possibly replace them if you have to. Yeah.
It's the quarantining part of it too. I mean, that's the same here. Like I got something come through and it said, if you get it, you have to be willing to self-isolate at home for a week. Mm-hmm. Then, because they were shooting in Morocco, it's you got to go to Morocco. Mm-hmm. You can have 10 days in Morocco quarantining in the hotel for 10 days before you can come and then just do your scene, which would effectively in about, you know, work-wise, it would have been a day's work. Like, it's a day's work on set. But actually, you have to basically say that you're available for almost a month. Because then if I would have come back, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks in the UK when you come back. Sure, so now it's like, whoa, that's a lot of logistics just to be able to go and work on something that's shooting in a different region to where you're based already.
Yeah, it's tough. It's nuts. It's really tough, you know, but it's like I said, it's kind of all we got, you know, everybody's trying the best they can do. And that's where I think this agreement with between the studios and the unions is so vital, because it talks about quarantine pay. It talks about when work starts, talks about who is paying for testing, you know, all of these different things. So I think that sort of agreement is a good way forward, because it's not just a throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks. It's, you know, it's a clear set of rules, not just a guideline. So that's always good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I guess I'm moving to North Carolina. I'll see you soon.
Welcome.
Amazing. You're due a move, I think, aren't you? You're due a move right about now, Cal. You usually move every 5 years.
Yeah, I'm doing it. It's every 5 years, so I'm doing moves. So.
Yeah.
You're so funny.
Perfect.
All right, that was all the questions I had for you. Thank you for answering that.
My pleasure. Thanks for being here, Cal. Nice to see your face.
Nice to see you again after 10 years.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely.
Thanks for joining, man.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Take care. See you later. Bye. I like having friends on. I can be awful to them. I love Cal. He's great. I'm going to ask this one. I'm going to ask for an honest answer because I always find it intriguing from an actor's point of view.
Okay.
Because he met you 10 years ago, hand on heart, did you remember him when he came in the room then, or was it just like new person?
I recognize the name.
Fine.
Okay. It's, you know, it's one of those things where like,
there's you've got something.
You've got an elephant's memory. A lot of cast directors have an elephant's memory, but you have to like, it's not always immediate connect the dots. You know, you might recognize the face or recognize the name or whatever.
Thought it was super interesting because 10 years is a long time. If it were me, I would have forgotten.
10 years out of a lifetime, it's, you know, whatever. But you know, when you've got a name like his, that's
true.
Unique.
True.
You know, it's easy to remember.
That's a good one to put out there, and I'm glad you said it, because how many times do sometimes actors think we have to change our name to something that fits in more or sounds like a good stage name or whatever,
right.
Not owning that uniqueness. So I think thank you for saying that, because I think, you know, even if one person hears that and goes, oh, I can claim and honor my heritage, that's super important.
Yeah, for sure. It
wonderful.
Really is.
I see Lauren's been waiting in this waiting room for a while, bless her. So I'm going to probably, there's no countdown on this. I wish there was, but she's probably going to get
Hunger Games.
She's going to get dropped. She's going to get dropped in here without knowing.
Get that
Hello.
Big buzz.
I know. Hey, Lauren.
Hi,
Lauren.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Fantastic. Thank you for asking.
Of course.
So I'm from New Orleans, so I have to ask you, what are you thinking about New Orleans?
Well, I'm not in New Orleans. I'm in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, Asheville.
Yes. I've worked on a bunch of different projects that shot in New Orleans and in Louisiana in general. But I live in the mountains. So
but you haven't even visited?
No, I've not. Not recently. You know, when the first project I did here, and this is pre-COVID, the first project that I did that was shot in New Orleans, when they called me for it, they were like, hey, we want you to work on the show. It's going to shoot in New Orleans. And I was like, great. I'm not that close to New Orleans. Is that okay? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, well, I can get there for callbacks, whatever you guys need, like, you know, easy peasy. And they were like, oh, no, you just work from home. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I can get there though, if you need me to. And they were like, no, we're not going to need you to. It's fine. You just do everything virtually. So okay. that was 2018, you know, and I did an entire 10 episode show just entirely virtually. And we did do some virtual callbacks, with kids, namely. but for the most part, everything was just done off tape. And sometimes it was a retape, you know, a lot of times it was their initial tape. Sometimes I gave notes and they did retapes and things like that. But yeah, this market in general has been functioning virtually for a long time, you know, and it does give those of us in the region who have been doing it a leg up in now times, for sure, because we're more comfortable with it, you know.
Yeah, sure.
We're not necessarily great at it, but we're more comfortable with it than some other people who maybe have less experience with it.
Oh, you are pretty good. I mean, judging from like Star Trek and carbon and things like that. Now, you did do a really great show. I had to ask about the assassination of JFK.
Oh, the 11/22/63.
Yeah. Do you plan on, or do you know if you'll be doing anything like that again? Because that was such a very interesting.
I mean, that was that. That project was hugely unique. You know, that it was a unbelievable book by Stephen King. And when Bad Robot got the rights to it, so I was working with April Webster at the time. She had read the book. She gave it to me. I read it. We both devoured it. We were completely obsessed with it. And we saw Bad Robot got the rights. And we were working on another Bad Robot project at the time. And I was like, April, email JJ right now and see if we can work on this thing. And so we were hugely excited, enthusiastic about that project, you know, long before it was ever going to be adapted into anything. And then we just lucked out getting to work on it, really. The people involved in that project were just so dreamy. The showrunner who adapted it, Bridget Carpenter, she loves actors so much and loves theater actors, and like working with her and our executives at Bad Robot, Kathy and Athena and JJ, and it was for Warner Brothers where we had worked a lot of, you know, done a lot of work as well. And just the whole thing felt like we were in a creative heaven. and the stories were amazing and the characters were amazing. It was half fictional, half real historical figures, which is just the dreamiest thing. And it was just a really unique experience that I don't know that is that easily replicated. Thanks to 2020 going virtual, I'm actually working with April on another historical project. This one's a feature film, a World War II movie.
Ooh.
That's half historical, half fictional. And it's going to shoot in overseas, hopefully in 2021. But that's, you know, thanks to 2020, I get to work with April again, which I haven't been able to do since I left in 2017. So
she's great. She's really great.
She's my family.
Yeah, she's terrific just for actors and everything. Everyone loves her. I think she's great. How do you approach something that's half fictional, half historic? Because obviously there must be a lot of pressure to get the actual real historical characters correct.
Yeah, I love it, frankly. I love going down the research rabbit hole. I love trying to figure out voices and speaking styles and styling in general, you know, the look of things. There's some people have a good period look, meaning that they can translate easily to almost any other period, and some people look very 21st century. that it's just faces. It's just a face thing. So I love the blend. It's very fun doing the blend. There's Sorkin has a new movie about the Chicago Seven coming out. A million gazillion years ago, I cast a movie about the Chicago Seven or the Chicago Eight. There was an eighth person, which I don't know. Obviously, this movie maybe just doesn't address. I don't know. God, we maybe cast that thing 15 years ago, something like that. The adaptation was a literal adaptation of the transcript from the court case. So it was very historical, very dry also, I think, from that standpoint, but very, very historical. Like, you cannot mess with this. These people were real. And that was really fun to do, really interesting too. I think it's when you find the right person to play a historical figure, it's super exciting because you're like, oh, hey, that's pretty undeniable. You know, it just, everything clicks, the performance clicks, but also the look and the feel and the sound and everything else too. So it's super satisfying when you find that. And then you get to see them in their hair, makeup, wardrobe, and you're like, oh yeah, we got the right person there. It's great. It's I find it so fun. It's a perfect blend of research and history and creativity for me. I love it.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Hey, one last question. What's your favorite non-industry related thing to do?
Well, I have a 3-year-old, so really it's just playing with him. You know, aww. He's the reason for everything now. So it's just, he's at that age where he's really discovering things. His language has exploded, watching him sort of trying to interact with other kids, especially now, I think is just endlessly interesting and fun and heartwarming and wonderful. So everything that is not work related for me is pretty much revolves around him.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And getting
my pleasure, Lauren. Thank you for being here.
Yes, of course.
Take good care.
Lauren.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank
you. I never know if I need to evict people or not, but I feel there's this terrible thing.
Are they waiting for you? Are you waiting for
them? I don't
them?
Know. And it's like, I don't feel like we should have that kind of power where you can click remove on somebody. It feels...
You can put them back into the waiting room. Did you know
you
that?
You can. Okay. I didn't know that, but that feels like sending someone to purgatory. That's even more confusing.
Well, at least there they can figure their own stuff out.
I guess, right? But then like, it's like, wait, does I have to do the buzzer thing again? Once was bad enough. In my mind, it's like when in the 80s and 90s, the wrestling thing used to have the Royal Rumble. I don't know if you ever like watched that, where like the wrestlers would come in and they'd be like,
right.
And the buzzer would go off and someone comes charging in and then just gets thrown right back out. It feels to me like this is the audition equivalent of that. Just free for
maybe.
All.
Maybe, yeah.
I wanted to touch a little bit, like I said before, on sort of, not really from the Zoom side, just generally like working with filmmakers, because I know sure. that's another big part of obviously, you know, what you do. And I don't mean working with the studios or the networks, maybe on a sort of that level, but from the indie side. Mm-hmm. For you, when someone comes to you with a project and is looking for you to get involved and come on board, what are some of the key things that you look for in terms of that project, the people, in terms of how you want to collaborate with them? And what's normally the thing that makes you tweak and say, okay, yeah, I want to do this? And I appreciate that might vary. But I guess the lead to that question is, are there certain themes or is there something that you always have to be drawn to there?
It's a script. It starts and ends with the script, you know? The filmmakers involved, a lot of times we work with people with whom we have a prior relationship. So that's always a huge draw. I mean, they're friends, they're fellow collaborators or former collaborators. So they, you know, their participation in it is always part of the draw to want to do it. Or is it a new burgeoning director who, you know, this is their first time directing and they're really ready and worthy and they've got, you know, a body of short films or music videos or whatever to sort of add to their clout. You can see their vision and their style. But the script is always the first thing. Mm-hmm. It's the first thing that is sent to us to see if we're interested, if this is a story that we want to help tell. And sometimes we'll get sent scripts by former collaborators, you know, old producer friends, whatever, director friends, and we don't love the script, but we love them. In which case we have to decide what's, you know, is there a way that we can service this project? What drew them, our friends and collaborators who we trust, to this project? Is there something in that can also draw us to it as well? You know, maybe it's that a revision is coming or just a vision mm-hmm. in general of how they're going to shoot this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, what is meaningful here?
And I guess like, why now? You know, why?
Right. Yeah.
Why is now the time to tell this particular
right.
story?
Right. Right. So the, you know, some producers reach out to us and they're still sort of building their reputation, they're building their resume, but there's something in their potential or there's something in the script that we're like, poof, I would really like to work with these people, or I'd really like to work on this project or whatever it is. And that's different for every casting director.
Sure.
You know, some people have stories that are deeply meaningful to them. They're not getting paid at all to cast it. But there's something deeply meaningful in the story, and there's something about the director or writer or producer that they feel really strongly about, helping their vision come to life. So, it's just different for everybody, but I think it really does start and end with the script. If the script is lacking or, lacking meaning for to us, and this is the script, this is going to be the shooting script, there are no plans to change it, then, you know, what are the other factors involved, and do they outweigh that? You know, if they don't, or if the script really just does not speak to us, it's just not our thing. It doesn't mean it's not good. It could just not be something that speaks to us or that we feel we can service correctly. You know, then we can have a conversation about that. But the we're all storytellers at the beginning and end of the day, right? So the script has to draw us, because we have to sell it to the agents and managers and the actors too.
And yeah, when it's not such a great script, it's hard to then make the end product be anything spectacular if the story has flaws from the outset.
You know, you have to really rely on the director if the script is flawed. And if the director is new, then, you know, that's a harder, it's not impossible by any means. And these directors can be very, very talented. But it is a harder,
you're starting on the back foot already a little bit, right? I think it was, you know, super important point as well that you made about, does it resonate with you? And just, is it your kind of thing thematically or whatever, which again, flip it now back, I'm playing ping pong, back to the acting side. It is the same deal where it's just one of those where, you know, maybe certain actors don't necessarily fit in the world of the types of things that you cast. And it doesn't mean that they're bad actors or that, we can get into that place. Mm-hmm. But also, I guess, knowing from an actor's perspective, who are the casting offices and people that are more likely to be collaborators of yours than trying to spaghetti sling, you know, a shitload of your time to hit everybody just carte blanche, because there's no way you can be everybody's flavor.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, right? Is that art is subjective, you know? And so not only do we end up sort of casting within certain genres, much like actors, casting actors can often get typecast. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be. We want to be able to do everything. We're artists just like you guys are. But it does happen. We do get, you know, specifically asked to do certain genres or types of projects over and over and over again. And within that, you're right. I think if you as the actor can be like, I really fit the type of thing that this casting director tends to cast, they are on my list of, they cast shows or movies or projects that I would kill to be on. I'm going to put them in my top 5 or 10 of people who I want to specifically target. I think that is an incredibly smart business move. You know, why, I used to work with a producer who always said, work smart, not hard, right? Like, why spread your energy thin when you can target your energy and have it sort of really work to your advantage in that way? I think that it's incredibly savvy.
Well, I guess, you know, we want to please everybody, artists or not, but I guess as artists, we have that underlying maybe thing, and when we get into it, that we're looking for a little bit of validation or approval, you know, early on, and you got to work through that, and hopefully one day we all get to a point where, you know, we get our personal stuff together a bit more, and then the art becomes less out of desperation.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, right? Like, you will get to a point in your career where you're going out for everybody. You know, you're going out for all different genres and different casting directors and things like that. But early on, as you're trying to make inroads and make connections and build relationships, having those people sort of specifically selected who's, you know, tonally you fit the things that they tend to cast is a good use of your time and energy.
Building trust, right? You gotta
show
people that you can. You don't want the handyman. You want the plumber. You want the electrician.
And right.
That's, you know, just as simple as that. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, and I don't want to delve into like loads of different myriads of stuff around casting. So I think what would be interesting to get your view on is if you could give like one note on the biggest thing that you think is necessary to demystify about the process for actors, what do you feel that would be, or what normally seems to crop up as the biggest thing that you then just have to, no, it's not that.
People always think that we're the enemy. I mean, this rumor that casting directors are the enemy, we're this big, you know, locked door that you have to figure out. We are the hurdle. We're the
gatekeeper. You know,
yes, that we are opposing you at every turn.
Why do you think that is, out of interest?
Well, I think I think people do see us as the gatekeeper because we're the ones, you know, allowing access, we're providing the opportunity. But I think what you need to remember is if you've been granted the opportunity, that means we want to collaborate with you. We like you. We want you to succeed. So, you know, this whole idea that when you walk into a room, you know, casting directors can be cold, or when you enter in onto a Zoom, casting directors can be cold. We're human beings too. We got our own shit going on. We have bad days. Like I said, we can be fired, so we need to do things right. You know, we need to service a lot of different personalities, including people at the executive level as well. And a lot of times those people disagree and we have to find a happy medium for everybody. We've got our own families and the pandemic stuff to deal with and whatever.
How dare you have lives of your own? It's terrible.
You know, I tell you. And I think that this idea that if we're not super warm and friendly, it means that we're against you has been perpetuated. It's just this idea that like, oh yeah, this person doesn't like me. They don't want me to succeed. They're trying to make it harder for me. And that's not remotely the case. Like you can't get into casting if you don't like actors. They just don't go, you know, that's just not possible. So,
and a lot of the time casting people have been actors or studied acting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I get it.
For sure. So I think if you can look at us as collaborators, if we've given you the opportunity, then we're looking forward to seeing your real work. We're wanting you to do well. We want you to answer our posed question of, can you be this thing? And if you're not getting the opportunity, it could be for a myriad of different reasons. It could be your materials don't show you off well. Your headshot, your resume, your reel. It could be that your agents see you as different than the way you see yourself, and so they're submitting you for things that maybe you have less chance of getting in on. You know, there's just so many different things that go into the decision making process. It could be that we feel that you're not ready, given your resume and your reel. There's all kinds of different things, but I think once you receive the opportunity to tape, to join a virtual casting, to eventually one day again go in person to an audition, you should know that we're rooting for you, you know, and not that that's going to cure your audition nerves, but hopefully it will at least help turn them into happy adrenaline, as opposed to like, I need this person to like me.
Yeah. It's also, I think, the thing of, and then this person can get me a job. You know, that's kind of hanging with you, right? And it's that old adage of, you're not really going to book the job, you're going to, I hate this.
Book the room.
I didn't want to say book the room. That also sounds really awful, but you're building the relationships. And as awful as it sounds, I guess it's, you know, making fans and getting called back by those people, or getting called in is the win, is the work, and the cherry on top is the actual job with the paycheck if you get it. Because God, there's a shitload of us actors out there, and I think that's been super apparent with lockdown. You like, if you saw the We Audition things that were happening, where they were doing some one-to-ones, and sometimes you go into those waiting rooms and you're like, there's like thousands of people here waiting. And like, the casting person's only gonna probably see maybe
10.
Yeah, like 20 or 30 tops if they've got time. And that's just the ones that know about this. So, you know, the numbers and the math don't necessarily stand in our favor when it comes to all this stuff as well.
Well, that's why I think, you know, going back to what we were talking about early on, you know, doing things that fill your cup, because the acting, you know, the entertainment industry is not going anywhere. They're adapting to now. Yep. But the jobs might be fewer given the state of the world. So if you aren't going to have as many opportunities to get on set and do what you love, how can you fill your artistic cup or just your emotional everyday cup, you know, if you don't get to be on set as much as you would like to right now?
Yeah.
Or on stage. Stage.
Well, that's another, I mean,
right.
At least we've got something with screen. Stage just seems like,
oh God, I can't, it breaks my heart to even think about it. I hope they can figure something out. It's just killer.
Who knows? Even at reduced capacities, it just doesn't seem financially possible. I don't know. We'll see. I don't think it's this year for sure.
No, definitely not 2020. Yeah.
That's a downer to end this on, though. So I'm going to have to find a pick. Because you brought it so full circle. Nice. It's like, oh my, wow. Like, Erica, you should host a show of your own, because you just like did all the hard lifting for me. I like to end these actually with sort of very quick fire 10 questions at the end here. I basically, as all good artists do, I've stolen them from other artists. it's the inside the actor's studio question. Used to ask, which yes. he stole from that French guy anyway. So
okay,
continuing the legacy. So the first question is, what is your favorite word?
Word?
Yep.
Oh God.
Is that it? That's two words.
I feel like this is cheating a little bit, but it's onomatopoeia.
Okay. No one said it before, so it's not a cheat.
Okay, I love spelling it out. I love the sound of it. I love how many syllables are in it. I don't use it that often, but I just, as a word,
strong. It's a good word. Yeah. You should try to incorporate it more into your daily life.
No thanks. Okay. I have a 3-year-old, remember? I keep Fair words enough. Brief.
Fair enough, okay. what's your least favorite word?
cold, specifically in relationship to women, as a descriptor for women.
Okay. I think
it's such a bullshit descriptor. Screw you for using it. Not you.
No, that's fair. That's
but people who use it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because it's not really descriptive of a person.
It's a cover for bitch.
And yeah, okay. What you mean.
Well, say what you mean, but also, like, if a woman is has a wall up with you, there's a reason, and it has to do with their lived experience. So
that's
I think it's such a cop out as a descriptor.
Because actually, you probably are right. It's a descriptor used more for women than for guys.
Used for women by men.
Yeah, I don't think guys are just given a totally different descriptor for that same kind of behavior.
Oh yeah, well, it's strength for them. It's, you know, presence. So
yes, them, them, for them.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, you have nothing to do with that.
I have nothing to do with that. That's why I've got my name. My parents thought, well, just give me a unisex name so I can just pick sides
Be an ally. Be the ally.
There you go. The next question is, what turns you on in a creative, intellectual kind of way?
Imagination. And, you know, I love nothing more than losing myself in a story.
Oh, that's why you do what you do.
It's just so dreamy. It's so fun.
On the flip, next question is, what turns you off?
Ego getting in the way of imagination.
Just anything, but I guess imagination for sure.
Yeah.
Fifth is optional, but I've heard you swear once or twice on this. I don't think it's a problem.
Oh, yes.
Because, yeah, it's what's your favorite swear word?
Oh, it's definitely fuck. It just, it can really encompass your feelings.
You'd be surprised how often that one comes up. It's just the most used and just... It's,
you know,
multi-use.
It can cover any emotion.
Exactly. What is your favorite sound or noise?
Favorite sound or noise? My son's laughter, particularly when he is being tickled or he's got that like very uncontrollable, exhausted laughter where he just can't stop himself. Oh man, it's so cute.
It's so pure. Just,
it is. It's unbelievably pure. Love it.
What's your least favorite sound or noise?
Anything that sort of, I don't like too much noise all at once. So like if my husband is vacuuming and the TV is on and my son is yelling in the other room, I feel like I'm going to go insane.
Right.
So it's just a combination of loud sounds. It's can't do it.
Gotcha. What job or profession other than your own would you most like to attempt?
I thought for a long time I wanted to be in the medical profession. When I was a teenager, going into the arts, I wanted to be a doctor. And then I saw somebody's leg bone and I was like, I don't think I want to do this anymore. But I love the idea of helping people feel better. So there was a brief time where I thought I might want to be a physical therapist, something like that, where it's less bones and blood.
Physically feel better.
Right. Like... Yeah, physically. I don't think I could be a therapist. I would just...
You know, as a casting person, there's a little bit of you that probably is a therapist.
Yes, 1,000,000%. But I think because I have seen even that much of it, I know that I wouldn't want to do an entire career on it.
Don't pull the veil back all the way because that's too much. You can't.
I'm in therapy. Away. I'm so grateful for a therapist. For sure. You know.
For sure. Mm-hmm. What job or profession would you never want to attempt under any circumstance?
Anything in finance. Yeah. Oh God, I just.
But bless those people too, like accountants do all that for us. I assume love it.
Yes, absolutely. My husband, total left brain finance mind, whatever. I don't want anything to do with it. I am not interested.
Final question. It's a little bit more of the old ethereal one, but it's when it's all said and done, what would you like the story of your life to be? What kind of legacy would you like to leave?
That I was a helper, you know, and whatever context that is, personally, professionally, I could provide help as needed, whatever that means. I think that would make me feel like I left something good behind.
Being of service.
Yeah.
You obviously, you know, are implicitly through casting and what you do as a casting professional, but also all the other things that we kind of touched on at the top there with the classes and the coaching and the consulting, and then just, you know, naturally in life outside of your profession. Simply being a mom means that you're a helper to a little person. So
crying.
You know, you're well, that's you know, you're doing it. Look, it's been a blast. I appreciate you taking the time. I guess final moment to you, really, maybe let people know where they can connect with you if they want to.
Sure.
And final message, any kind of final parting words that you'd want to close it off for anyone listening that you think super poignant.
Sure. So you guys can, y'all can find me through my website, which is ericasbreamcasting.com. I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram, at Erica S. Bream Cast on both. You can find me either of those ways. I'm not on Facebook. If you find me there, that's not me. Mm-hmm. and just in terms of words to leave you all with, the entertainment industry will be there. It will be there. If you need this time because you don't feel safe, you don't feel comfortable, because you would rather just be home with your family, because you would rather spend time doing something else because it's paying your bills right now, that's fine. You can come back to acting when you're ready. It is there for you. It will always be there for you in some way, shape, or form. The best thing you all can do for yourselves right now is take care of yourselves. Whatever that means for you is fine. It's completely fine. Do you.
See, you are a therapist deep down.
That's the best I can do.
I love that. That's amazing. Erica, thank you so much. I'm going to leave
pleasure.
You enjoy the rest of your day. Get back to your loved ones. But This has been great. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for doing these.
My pleasure. My pleasure. All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.